You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Thursday, August 14th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, our summer vacation continues. Matt is... Where did you go, Matt?
I went to Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida.
That's not a joke, folks. That's serious. Oh, and incidentally, Matt does not have any children. Right? I mean...
I don't have any. As far as I know, I don't have any children.
So I'm just saying. That's where Matt went on vacation. Michael's at probably some yogi retreat or something.
Yoga retreat. Organic wine.
Napa Valley wine tasting tour.
Some meetings with some foreign policy folks.
However,
some checks to shill on Ukraine.
I am probably, I don't know, painting something, doing whatever Nikki has told me that I've got to do. Complete on this vacation. That's what I'm probably doing. Am I having fun? I don't know. Maybe. Meanwhile, we have a deep archive show for you. Amy Goodman and Anthony Arnov, Janine and I interviewed them together back in June of 2004. Amy Goodman had a new book out. And interesting conversation. And then for members... We've got an interview that Janine and I did with John Sayles, the director. And I think I tagged on, I don't know what else is on that. You know, I pull these things quickly for you. All right, tomorrow we will have some, not only new to you, but just new interviews. RJ Eskow, Shanna Bellows running for Senate in Maine. Melissa Schwartz of the Alliance for Justice, and for members, a long interview with George Carlin back in 2004. So enjoy today's interview with Amy Goodman, and members, enjoy Amy Goodman and John Sayles, and we'll be back tomorrow. We're back live next Wednesday. Here's that interview now.
Hello. We're back on the Majority Report. That was Anthony Arnov, who is our book man, our untitled Monday Night Book segment man, Anthony Arnov. And with him tonight is one of not just my hero, but I think anybody who leads an examined life, who cares enough to lead an examined life, knows that Amy Goodman is a heroic figure, or as the Nation magazine would say, an embedded patriot. One of the embedded patriots, and they mean that in a good way, as opposed to the embedded geisha journalists who serve it, who service the president. And we don't like them as much, if at all. But Amy Goodman is the internationally acclaimed journalist and host of Democracy Now!, which is on Pacifica Radio and also simulcast on Free Speech TV, and if you're in the tri-state area, SUNY TV. She has written a book with her brother called The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. And we have three copies in here for some reason. which
is... We have four.
We actually have four copies in the room right now as we speak. Five.
Make it five.
That is... Now, that's funny. And you know what? Everybody should have one. So actually, we're doing the right thing. And Anthony, what are we talking about today? I know that Amy just got back from Kansas City, and she had commented that her arms were very tired. She had just flown in.
And her arms
were exhausted.
Tell us a bit about this book tour that you've been on.
Well, I don't think we're even a quarter way through, but it's around 100 cities right now. So this weekend we were in Long Beach for the UUs. You know who the UUs are?
The UUs?
Yes.
No.
UU are with us or against us. They are the Unitarian Universalists. Their annual convention of thousands. And it was great to be there in Long Beach. And then... we headed to Orlando for the American Library Association. You know, those people who are in the crosshairs of the John Ashcroft Justice Department.
Yeah, librarians now, you have to, you work for the Department of Justice, right?
Well, you have to turn over materials. You have to turn over reading lists that certain people that are suspicious, you know, that the Justice Department is suspicious of, they demand that you turn over, as a librarian, all of the books they've checked out. Maybe even more personal information than that. And also, thanks to librarians, Michael Moore's book, Dude, Where's My Country? Right?
Actually,
Stupid White Men. That's right. Stupid White Men saw the light of day because of librarians.
In fact, Michael dedicates Dude, Where's My Country to Anne Sparanese, who I was just with two nights ago, who is the Englewood, New Jersey librarian, who when Michael came out to New Jersey, a little bit despondent, it was soon after 2001, September 11th, and he had written this book, Stupid White Men and Other Sorry Excuses for the State of the Nation, and HarperCollins threatened to pulp all 50,000 copies unless he changed the title and what was inside, and he said he didn't want to, and he didn't know what to do, and he was there. He already had this commitment to speak to librarians, so he said, oh, my God, what am I going to do? So Anne went home as a good librarian and got on the listservs, and she told people what this publisher was going to do, and publishers care about librarians, and they started emailing. And before you know it, yes, those 50,000 books were set free, and they became millions of books. And, well, the rest is history, as we see right through to this past weekend, Michael Moore breaking records again at the box office.
And do you think there will be any success on the part of people who are claiming that Michael Moore's movie or the commercials for it are violating campaign finance? Well, you know how they're trying to get on a technicality with McCain-Feingold finance? That he can't show commercials.
I think it is astounding the rage that is being expressed by the mainstream media against Michael. I'm not going to call it mainstream anymore. I call it an extreme media, and it goes back to the lead up to the invasion. I mean, you had the four major nightly newscasts, NBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS's NewsHour, Jim Lehrer, the four major nightly newscasts. The 2 weeks around Colin Powell pushing for war at the UN, 393 interviews done around war, only three were with anti-war representatives. That is astounding. It doesn't represent mainstream America. Mainstream America was in a very different place. They were for more inspections and more diplomacy. But the media was beating the drums for war relentlessly. And now they are trying to... I mean, it's amazing to watch them deal with Michael Moore. They don't want to interview him to begin with, but he is so in the stratosphere now, they really have no choice. First, Disney tries to squelch him, and let's not forget, Disney owns ABC. We're living in a time of the greatest media consolidation that we've ever seen. And they try to squelch the distribution of the film by forbidding Miramax, their subsidiary. Miramax, then their owners, the Weinsteins, get the rights themselves, and Lionsgate and IFC agrees to do it. To do the distribution, and now it's out there in hundreds of theaters, and there's a movement to try to get them knocked out of the theaters, but that's not going to work either.
Yeah, Move America Forward has tried
Which
to
was a,
harass
it was a publicity. It's a publicity.
You
company,
would think that
right?
Michael that paid for this, right? You would think.
Right. And it happens time and time again.
It was a, I think when they first put up that website, they forgot to hide who registered it, and it was registered to a publicity firm that was hired by I don't know who hired it, but it's odd that it's an odd thing that a publicity firm.
That's because those right wing movements don't represent America either. You can't have a grassroots movement to stop Michael Moore's film.
It's called AstroTurf. That's the grassroots movement that is manufactured. But from when I was in Orlando that night, they were premiering it at the American Library Association and then flew to Kansas City, where I was speaking with Louis Duguid, who is editorial writer for the Kansas City Star, who from the beginning has spoken out against war and been very brave at the Kansas City Star. But he was talking about being at the movie. All the major houses have it, like six of them in Kansas City, all sold out. This is a very big deal.
And Ann Richards, governor, former governor of Texas, said that the multiplex in a strip mall near her home in Texas, all the theaters had it, and all were sold out. This is the Majority Report. I'm Janine Garofalo here with Sam Cedar, and in studio we have Anthony Arnove and Amy Goodman, author of The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. We will be right back. We are back on the Majority Report. I'm Janine Garofalo here with Sam Cedar in studio. We have Anthony Arnove, author and editor, here again for the Monday Night Books segment. Tonight, the featured author is Amy Goodman, co-author of The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. Amy is from Democracy Now!, and her brother David is a journalist who also co-read it with her. He's not here.
No.
He is not here now. But
he's getting squeezed out of the picture.
He's a... We don't have enough chairs.
No,
or
actually,
mics.
He'll be here in New York on Wednesday because we're doing a Barnes & Noble reading up at 82nd and Broadway in New York City. They're a little concerned it'll be a political rally, but we have assured them we are going to be talking about what the media should be, the exception to the rulers.
And this is Wednesday at what time?
7:30 in the evening.
Okay. And you've been on a massive book tour.
Yes, this is very massive. We just come from Kansas City, and this week on Thursday headed up to Alberta, Canada, and then to San Francisco, and then we'll go to Cleveland, but we'll go to Boonville, California, and then come on back here. But it's been incredible, the response. In Minneapolis, 1,500 people came out, and they said it was hotter than Potter, Louise Erdrich's bookstore, the great Native American writer that we work with. We're celebrating the whole independent media landscape, from public radio, community radio, and TV stations to independent bookstores around the country. And, I mean, these are all sanctuaries of dissent that we must preserve, like this program.
How many stations are you now broadcasting on?
Well, we're the largest public media collaboration in the country. We're broadcasting now on over 230 stations, Pacifica stations, NPR stations, public access TV stations. Got on our first PBS station. We're on Free Speech TV, as Janine said, and that's channel 9415 of Dish Network. And we video and audio stream. Millions of people access us on the web at democracynow.org.
And I was wondering if you could tell a story from the book that I thought encapsulated the state of the media and its coverage of war, which was your experience going on the Sally Jesse Raphael show.
That's right. Now, this wasn't this war. This was the last one. It's the Persian Gulf War in 1991. This was when Westinghouse owned CBS. General Electric was still owning NBC as it does now. Those are two of the major nuclear weapons manufacturers making most of the weapons for most of the parts for most of the weapons in the Persian Gulf War. So that's the landscape we were in. And I was on WBAI or Pacifica Station in New York, railing against the bombing of the cradle of civilization back to the cradle when I got a call from a producer or a volunteer, said we were in fundraising drive. She ran in, she said, Sally Jesse Raphael shows online. I said, yeah, right. And so she said, no. And so she came back. I thought, oh, my God. Volunteers are the heart of community radio. I just thought this one was hallucinating. But anyway, she was so persistent. I just picked up the phone. And sure enough, there she was. The producer said she was calling from her limousine. I guess her chauffeur had turned on the program and asked if I would join the show in 2 days, that they would have a panel of women for and against the war. I thought about what to wear. You know, Sally Jesse Raphael show, whether to dress as a woman, masquerading as a man, pretending to be a woman, kind of being a man, but actually being a woman. But anyway, I figured out what to do. And I got over there, and they divided us into two rooms, three of the pro-war women in the one green room and us three anti-war women in the other room. And a woman came out, a producer, and said, I want you to duke it out on the stage. I don't want you to meet before you go out there. I really want this show to work. I wanted to get the ratings the other shows get. And I thought she was onto something. I mean, it doesn't matter if you work in the system or outside the system. What matters is you can accomplish what you want. And if you can, no matter how painful, stay there and do it. So here she was wanting to do something good. So we went out on the stage and the lights came up. The music came on. Sally came out. She handed the microphone to a woman in the audience who said, I'm afraid of Saddam Hussein's biological and chemical weapons, to which the woman next to me Dr. Yolanda Hewitt-Vaughn, who was an Army captain trained as a doctor, who said that she was trained to save lives, not take them, so she was refusing to go to the Gulf, said, I share your concern, but it's important to point out that Saddam was, that we have biological and chemical weapons right here in the United States. And before she could get out the word states, Sally whirled around. She came barreling down the aisle, and she started to shout, you be quiet, you shut up, this is my show, or you get out. Now, here was Dr. Yolanda Hewitt-Vaughn. She had big glasses, hair tied back, long black dress, petite, hands clasped in her lap, very soft-spoken. She looked almost Amish. By the way, I saw her last night in Kansas City, so hi, Yolanda. But I hadn't met her before. And here was Sally barreling down the aisle at such a velocity. I thought, you know, well, think about that. Producer said, I want you to duke it out on the stage. That was going through my mind, you know, the little Jerry Springer thing. My God, I thought she was going to strike Dr. Yolanda Hewitt-Vaughn. So as she's coming up on stage, I said, whoa, Sally, back off. And then, well, then they had told us we could invite our friends. I brought people from BAI, and they were in the audience chanting, free speech, you can dress them up, but you can't take them anywhere. So anyway, Sally started to break down. And she stopped the taping of the show. Her producers came out. They started to rock her back and forth, saying, it's okay, Sally. It's okay. I mean, it was the one moment of unity for us six women on the stage. We just stared in shock.
And what would have set her off about
well,
that?
Well, it was as if she had never heard an anti-war point of view before. And if these few words could shake this one woman like this, imagine if a few more of these words got out and were let loose
so
in this country.
So she literally had...
She had a breakdown.
A nervous breakdown.
So, but somehow, the producers convinced her to carry on with the taping of the show. But there was one caveat.
She's a brave woman.
We would have to raise our hands if we had anything to say. Now, I had never seen anything like this except on Sesame Street, but we agreed. And the show went on. And it was pretty good. I mean, she showed videotape of the protesters in Washington. And she asked me, who are these people? I didn't know everyone's name. But I said, these are people who think they're engaged in their, you know, patriotic duty. They're not invited into the corporate network studios to have a civilized discussion one-on-one about why they oppose war. They're not invited in like someone like Henry Kissinger, right, who is invited in quite frequently to all of the networks to explain why he supports every invasion, right? No. They
it's
can
one
only
of the few
hope.
Places that he can actually go now without being in fear of being indicted for war crimes.
Except
right?
for the studios in Qatar.
And they can only hope that on a global warming day, if they're 10,000, 100,000 strong, a CBS executive will open his window and that chant of no war will waft in and maybe hit an open microphone. But I said that's why they go out there. Even though most people don't identify with people screaming on streets, what choice do they have? And we went on with the discussion, and I said, you know, as the granddaughter of an Orthodox rabbi, I'm horrified to see little Israeli children wearing gas masks, but I'm more horrified to see little Palestinian children not wearing gas masks. And that's the kind of discussion we had. It was good. At the end of the program, we left. The cameraman gave me the thumbs up sign. I went back to WBAI and they said it would air in 2 days, and 2 days came and went and it didn't air. And so I called the producer. I said, what's up? They said, funny you should call, but there was a problem with the syncing of the video and the sound. I said, come on, there was a problem with the sound of their voices, of our voices, wasn't there? Shit, don't be like that. We'll have you back someday. I said, I don't think so. Dr. Yolanda Hewitt-Vaughn is about to go to jail. In fact, she was court-martialed. She was sentenced to 3 years in prison. She lived right under death row in the brig at Fort Leavenworth. She was ultimately freed after 8 months because Amnesty International declared her a prisoner of conscience. And when I was in St. Louis signing books, celebrating KDHX and DHTV, the community radio and TV there, a young man came up to me, and I wrote, Dear, and I said, what should I write? And he said, Emiliano Hewitt-Vaughn. It was her son. Mm-hmm. And he had become part of an amnesty chapter in his high school. Maybe he would someday free someone's mother like they had freed his. But anyway, I said, you know, that's not going to happen. You're not going to have us back. And I said, how'd you find out about that problem, that technical problem? They said, Chicago and Minneapolis called the stations there. So I called over to those stations. I didn't know where Sally aired in those, but I called 411 when you could still call 411 and it'd actually call in that city as opposed to call India. And I said, can you tell me which station Sally is on? And they said, in both cases, I called the operations director and asked where that show was. And they said, funny you should ask. I said I was a concerned viewer because they said that show was just pulled by New York. We're scrambling to get another one. So I called back, said the jig is up. I'd like to speak to the executive producer now. And they said he's a very busy man. So I'm back to BAI, and people were calling, where's the show? I said, I don't know. Don't call me. Call them. I don't know why they're not playing it. Years later, I bumped into a producer from the Sally Jesse Raphael show. She had so many calls came in, it shut down the offices for 2 days. All I know is that I got a call a few days later from a frantic high-level producer who said, the executive producer wants to speak to you now. I said, I'm a very busy woman. Anyway, they asked if I would cry censorship if they edited the program. I said, of course not. I'm an editor, too. You have every right, as Sally pointed out. It is her show. I assume you'll edit out Sally's fit. And they did, and the next day it ran. But because they'd held on to it, it ran with headlines that said, things get messy with Sally Jesse. And the most interesting response that I got was from women calling in from Southern military bases who said they'd never heard this view on television before, and they agreed with me. And they said that they can't have these debates on military bases. They rely on us and civilian society. I see the media as a huge kitchen table that stretches across this country, that we all sit around and debate and discuss the most important issues of the day. Life and death, war and peace, and anything less than that is a disservice to the servicemen and women of this country.
Well, how about Rush Limbaugh on Armed Services Radio? Anthony, Amy, what do you think about that? Is that a disservice, or... You know, they just have Rush Limbaugh on Armed Services Radio.
It's interesting because Mike Farrell, the actor, you know, did MASH. We just had him on Democracy Now! On Friday because we were in Los Angeles. By the way, he said he doesn't think MASH could ever start today. It would never get on television.
Absolutely couldn't.
Right.
For 100 different reasons, too. But
And Robert Altman couldn't make
But certainly with the politics of it. I have friends who have had problems on animated shows when a show that is actually now a fairly big hit and it sort of softens stuff up for them. But they were making fun of Bush, and they were called in by higher-ups. It's part of the Viacom empire. And they were told that a lot of making fun of George Bush, can't you do some of the Democrats? And the guy's just like, well, who? I mean, who can we make fun of? I mean, nobody knows any of these people. You know, it's a simple present, but there's a lot of problems with that type of.
What was the Steve Earle song that was pulled from a movie recently? It was
from the Cassavetes film.
Yeah,
Steve Earle just was in here. It was a movie that Cassavetes was a real wimp on. The son, Cassavetes, obviously Nick, right?
Yes.
Who felt it was too controversial because it was an anti-war type of anthem.
The funny part was that he originally said to him, Steve had originally said, I'm not sure, you know, what you want. I mean, you know, Steve was aware that he was going to bring something a little bit to the left. And he goes, no, go crazy. Go crazy.
Nick Cassavetes pushed him to get, whatever, man.
And then wouldn't return his phone calls after after it got.
And then Nick wrote a song, right? Didn't he say Cassavetes himself wrote a really bad song and put it in its place in the movie?
Well, you know, I think this censorship, first of all, it's un-American, it's unpatriotic, and it's a threat to national security in this country, this kind of crackdown that we're seeing. And I think that people across the political spectrum are getting completely fed up. Just before I came here, I went over to FedEx, and a woman who recognized me from the TV show, she just looked at me and said, I disagree with every word you utter.
That's what everyone says to me.
And she said, and I watch you every single day, and I can't stop. I am a hardcore Republican, she said. And I think people across the political spectrum, she was smiling. She said she'd come to the Barnes & Noble event on Wednesday, and she was excited, and her said her son watched every day, and he's Republican, too. But people across the political spectrum care about corporate control of their lives. They care about privacy. They care about what's happening in Iraq. Hundreds of U.S. soldiers, men and women who have died, over 800 and, you know, more than 11,000 Iraqi civilians have died. These are the people we supposedly went in to save and liberate. And they care about an absolutely out-of-control war budget, spending many more times than what is being spent at home to preserve our security in a true, real, authentic way. I think that political lines are breaking down right now.
What about the exposure of some of the lies about the war in Iraq, in particular just the New York Times having to backtrack recently? What did you make of that apology and how it was placed in the New York Times when they admitted that so much of their coverage had been, I mean, we can discuss to what extent they admitted how distorted their coverage had been, but they acknowledged that they gave too much credence to the views of the administration and didn't question the lines that were being fed to them by the Bush administration.
I know that some people called it the Times mea culpa. I call it their kinda culpa, and it just doesn't cut it. Buried on page A10, they don't name any names. You know, Judith Miller, the national security correspondent, led the way, but of course the editors had to approve this, and it should have gone right up the chain of command at the New York Times. I would like to see as many boxes, well, we call, David and I in the book, Exception to the Rulers, call in our chapter Lies of Our Times, for as many boxes, well, a full Department of Corrections at the New York Times, first of all, but as many boxes on the front page of the New York Times that they had these stories that were cheerleading for war, that paved the way for war, alleging weapons of mass destruction. I mean, we all know Jason Blair's name, right? That young reporter who lied and plagiarized and made up stories. And the New York Times did this unprecedented 5-full-page spread on him. Well, I care a lot less about the Jason Blair affair than I do about the Times coverage of the Bush Blair affair. I'd like to see the same full 5-page spread dissecting what they did, because in the case of Judith Miller's stories, acting as a conveyor belt for the lies of the administration, these lies took lives. It was systematic. We look at it from, well, right after the summer of 2002, key time, they're building up for war. In fact, this was, you know, Bush is on his ranch in Crawford, Texas, on an extended vacation, and someone asked Andrew Carr, the chief of staff, the former GM lobbyist, yes, what we're seeing in Washington is the ascendancy of the oiligarchy. Bush, a failed oil man. We know Dick Cheney, former head of Halliburton. Condoleezza Rice had an oil tanker named for her.
Hang on, Amy, right before you get to it, we have to take a break, but will you stay and say goodbye with us and on the other end so we can get this on the other end? This is the Majority Report. We'll be right back with Amy Goodman and Anthony Arnov.
Sorry.
He was Sam's wedding band. Oh, you can hear us. Oh, hi. We're back, and this is the Majority Report. Sam Cedar, Janine Garofalo, Anthony Arnov, Amy Goodman. Amy, let's pick up right where we left off.
Well, I was just talking about the New York Times acting as a conveyor belt for the lies of the administration. The White House propaganda blitz was launched on September 7, 2002 at the Camp David news conference. British Prime Minister Tony Blair stood side by side with his co-conspirator George Bush. Together, they declared evidence from a report published by the UN International Atomic Energy Agency showed that Iraq was 6 months away from building nuclear weapons. George Bush crowed, "I don't know what more evidence we need." Actually, any evidence would have helped. There was no such IAEA report. At the time, few mainstream U.S. journalists questioned the leader's outright lies. Instead, the following day, the so-called evidence popped up in the New York Times under the twin byline of Michael Gordon and Judith Miller. They wrote, "More than a decade after Saddam Hussein agreed to give up weapons of mass destruction, Iraq has stepped up its quest for nuclear weapons and has embarked on a worldwide hunt for materials to make an atomic bomb." In a revealing example how the story amplified administration spin, the authors included the phrase, "Soon to be repeated by Bush and his top officials, quote, the first sign of a smoking gun may be a mushroom cloud." Well, the Bush administration knew just what to do with a story that they had fed to Gordon and Miller. The next day, or the day the Times story ran, Vice President Dick Cheney made the rounds of the Sunday talk shows, went on NBC's Meet the Press. He declared that Iraq had purchased aluminum tubes to make enriched uranium. It didn't matter that the IAEA refuted the charge before and after it was made, but Cheney didn't want viewers just to take his word for it. He said, "There's a story in the New York Times this morning, and I want to attribute the Times," he said. This is the classic disinformation two-step. The White House leaks a lie to the Times, the newspaper publishes it as a startling expose, and then the White House conveniently masquerades between the credibility, behind the credibility of the Times. Rick MacArthur, who's publisher of Harper, said, "What mattered was the unencumbered rollout of a commercial for war, and Judith Miller was just getting warmed up." This is inexcusable because these lies took lives, and this happened over and over again, which is why I encourage people to get my book, The Exception to the Rulers, because if it hits number 15 or above in the New York Times, it gets printed in their pages. They don't do a review. They won't talk about the book. But then if it gets there despite themselves, because it just got there, we've hit 17 of the extended bestseller list. People who read the Times will have access to a different critique, to an analysis, and a whole universe of independent media they may know nothing about. And it's about time that this paper of record was challenged, because it sets the agenda for so much else of the media. You read the paper in the morning, the corporate networks do, they choose what stories to do, and it serves as a newswire for other newspapers around the country. They reprint these stories. It's got to be challenged.
And you can get that book with a link directly to it on Amazon, on MajorityReportRadio.com.
And you can also listen to democracynow.org for live web streaming of Amy's show. And you can get a daily news digest if you sign up there, put in your email address, and you'll get headlines every morning from Democracy
Now! You must do it, people, please. If you listen to nothing else I say, you must get the headlines from democracynow.org every day. It is as important as flossing, and I don't even floss. I don't.
But you get your headlines?
But I do get my headlines from Democracy Now! I don't work out, Anthony. I don't enjoy physical fitness as a rule. I do eat bread, rice, potatoes, and pasta, carbs only.
Somehow
but I do one
skin
thing
still
right.
Glows.
One
Somehow
thing. Well, that's still. A tinted moisturizer.
Oh.
One thing I do right is I go to Democracy Now! Every day. Every day and get these headlines. It is one of the best things you can do for yourself. It's better than physical fitness.
You know, now that we're also talking about the Times, I just want to remind everybody that our Operation Project Operation Jody Wilgorin is winding down. Wednesday, we will head over there with all of the goodies that you've sent us that will hopefully keep her occupied so that she need not get too bored with this campaign and this election this year and not write the drivel that she's been writing.
And patronize your public library and independent bookstores around this country. They are sanctuaries of dissent that must be preserved.
Maybe we'll
Absolutely.
Include a copy.
Let's
of the
give Jody Wilgorin
yes.
Exactly. We will do that. This is the Majority Report. Please join us tomorrow for Marcos Melitzas, Tom Hayden, and Joel Bakken.
Joel Bakken will be talking about. He's the author of The Corporation. Yes.
No, the movie The Corporation, the documentary. Right?
He's the author of The Corporation.
I thought it was a documentary.
I think we'll also be talking to the filmmakers.
Books,
films.
Books.
Majority Report, Air America Radio. We'll talk to you tomorrow.